Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Hi, my name is Joseph, and I'm a sex and love addict.
Joseph!
I might be more of an intrigue and validation addict, but that might be splitting hairs. I'll start off by saying that I was very shy and introverted growing up. I never went on a single date in high school. When I was 20, I got a job in entertainment, performing in front of an audience, and I started to break out of my shell. I started to date a little bit. I got my first girlfriend when I was 26 years old, and we dated for 3 years. And work was going well, and I was traveling a lot. And I never, ever, ever thought I'd be the kind of guy who cheats on his girlfriend, but I was on the road, and this woman in my industry who's well-respected and somebody I look up to invited me to a hotel room after an event, and I went. I was very shocked to find out just how easy it was, and I started engaging that more and more. I did feel bad for my girlfriend at the time, so I broke up with her with the idea that I was shelving her for later. Like, I would get all this acting out of my system, and then I would come back to her. But the acting out was never out of my system, and eventually we grew apart. My next girlfriend was when I was 31, and she was a 21-year-old performer in adult movies. And then the sex was wild and adventurous and very like fantasy-like, and she was bringing friends home, and it was just crazy stuff. And I convinced myself that I had feelings for her, but really I was in love with the sex we were having. And the resentment between the two of us really built up, and that relationship ended very poorly. My next relationship would be with the woman who I go on to marry. And then while I was working, I was performing in Japan during this time, and I was part of a 30-second video that went like crazy viral on the internet, and it was everywhere. And all of a sudden, all this attention and adoration was on me, and my bookings tripled, and my money tripled. And it was just a while, and I was no longer like part of the show. I was like the main attraction. And I had all, like I said, I had all this attention and was getting all this validation. And at the time I felt it was very difficult to do the performance and then go back to the hotel room after and watch reruns on late night cable television. I needed that validation to continue. So I started inviting women back to my hotel room. And then when I decided that I was going to propose to my ex-wife, I said, you know what, once we're engaged, I'll stop the cheating. And I blew right past that. And then when we got married, I told myself, okay, when we get married, I'll stop cheating. I'm not going to cheat on my wife. And I didn't for about 6 months before I started again. And during this time, she never found out that I was cheating, but I made a discovery that she had cheated on me. And for the first and only time we were together, I yelled at her and I threatened divorce. But I didn't really want divorce. I was madly in love with this woman, and I would have died for her, but I just couldn't stop cheating on her. So she suggested couples therapy, and that could have been very therapeutic for us, but I decided to victimize myself and was like, how dare you do this to me, and how can you, and I'm so hurt and distraught, and I was really guilting her. And eventually she felt, she got tired of being guilted, and she left me for the guy that she had cheated on me with. And I was very devastated and depressed. And my therapist would say, you have to grieve the loss of your marriage. You can't just avoid it. But I was like, no, I got this. I'll just take more bookings. I'll go out on the road longer. I'll sleep around more, and I'll just distract myself. And that's what I did. And I got very irresponsible with my acting out. I was 38 at the time, and I was sleeping with women who were 10, 12, 15 years younger than me. And not just sleeping with them, but like giving them these magical qualities, like, this is the woman that's gonna save me from my depression, and starting these like pseudo relationships with them. But once I got my validation from them, I moved on to the next one. And then the pandemic hit, and then everything shut down. And then, during the pandemic, there was like this like Me Too movement in my industry, and some women started naming me, and they said that they felt manipulated or used or coerced into it. And then one woman used the word assault, and when she used the word assault, my career was over. There was no investigation, no police involvement, but I lost all my bookings. I lost merchandise deals. I lost sponsorship deals. It was done. And then there's like this cancel campaign that came after me. And they didn't just come after me, but they also came after my friends. And my friends had to put out these public statements saying, like, I never saw that behavior in the 20 years I've known him, but fuck that guy. And I was alone. The only person to check in on me at the time was my ex-wife. And she was just making sure that I wasn't about to kill myself. And to be honest, she wasn't wrong for checking. And and then I had an acquaintance reach out and, you know, ask me, have you ever heard of Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous? And, you know, I hadn't. And he's like, I suggest you check out a meeting. And we were in the pandemic, so the only meetings were on Zoom. and it felt very impersonal, and like people had their screens off and all this stuff, and I couldn't really connect with it, so I didn't really take it seriously. And then after my depression, I got angry, and I started looking at like old text messages I had from these women, and I was like, oh, this clearly, like, this, she clearly lied, and this is reframed, and all this other stuff, and I started to gather all this evidence. And I hired an attorney and filed defamation of character lawsuits against some of these women. And the public perception of that was that I was re-victimizing these women. But I couldn't see them as victims, because victims implies perpetrator, and perpetrator implies intent. And as far as I was concerned, all these situations happen organically. And then when one of the cases got in front of a judge, the judge said that the evidence doesn't matter, and because I can't prove that she knowingly made a false statement and doesn't believe what she said, and which is required for defamation, and he threw it out. And my attorney said this judge punted on it, and that the laws are antiquated and not caught up to the power of social media, and suggested we appeal. But the judgment had a different effect on me, and I started to realize that I'm not allowed to tell these women how the events affected them, and that two people can have a different experience of the same event. And then I started diving into slot more. The in-person meetings had opened back up, and I was really like conscious of them and starting the steps and all this stuff. And the first thing I learned was from the stag meetings, and I realized that I didn't have any real friendships with men. Everything was competitive, everything was one-upsmanship. There was nobody I could be vulnerable with, nobody I could cry on their shoulder. And then that's what I found in slob, man. I could tell my emotions to it, and I could be honest with, and that was really therapeutic for me. And I think the main thing I learned is when I started going to the mixed meetings, and I would listen to women share openly and honestly, and realize that because of fear and pressure, that it's very difficult for a lot of women to say no or even set boundaries in sexual situations, and I hadn't even thought about their feelings. I just waited for my first opening and went for it. And that had a real effect on me. And then even within my marriage, my ex-wife and I, we had like a few threesomes. And after we were separated, she told me that she didn't really want to do that, but she felt like I needed it because of my sexual history. And that made me feel like I had used her body to gain access to other women's bodies. And that really, like, that was probably the lowest I ever felt. And then I also had like the spiritual awakening in SLA, where, you know, I'd grown up a Christian in a Christian family, but I was always a believer, but I wasn't a follower. And once I dove back in, the first thing I did was I had to unlearn these like dogmatic, fear-based tactics that religion often uses to gain obedience from people. And I started to realize that, you know, Jesus didn't come to make Christians, he came to heal broken hearts, and I had one. And you know, and through this spiritual awakening, I started to understand, you know, I started to have a relationship with God, and I realized in those moments when I feel shame, and that God's not ashamed of me. You know, he knew I would screw up, and he knew I would make mistakes and have rough seasons, but, you know, I don't have to run from him in those moments. I can run to him, and that really changed my perspective of my relationship with God. And you know, those things really had an effect on my life. And, you know, before SLA, I had made sex and finance and reputation my higher power. And through SLA, I've learned to have a different relationship with men, a different relationship with women, a different relationship with God. And those are things I couldn't say before. And, you know, right now, you know, the things that brought me into program aren't necessarily the things I'm dealing with now. I'm dealing with a bit of avoidant and anorexia because of my past, and my just being scared of starting something new with somebody and having to confess these things. Because if you Google me, the internet's going to tell you that I'm a sexual predator. And so when I meet a woman and I talk to her, I engage in her, you know, we start talking, I always wonder, when do I bring this up? Because I can't avoid it, because, you know, and if I bring it up too soon, is she going to be scared? Or if I wait too long and she discovers it herself, she's going to believe the narrative that's online, or she's going to think I'm hiding it. So that's why I keep coming back, because my addiction evolves, and even, and the things that, like I said, the things that brought me in aren't necessarily what keep me in. So that's why I find this program, and now I'm 5 years in it, and I still learn stuff all the time. So if I can suggest anything, it's just keep coming back and learn from your mistakes and let it evolve. And you know, when you find that you've maybe solved one or come to like, or at least acting better than you were before, like there's usually something that, like, the addiction will usually peek its head somewhere else. So that's what I got. Thanks for letting me share.